97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio.
Again, coming up in the next hour after the news, my friend John Ziegler, who is the host of the podcast, The Death of Journalism. But he has also extensively done research, and he did a podcast on the Penn State situation with Jerry Sandusky. And that actually came up, that particular case came up in relation to a case that the ACLU is bringing against Missouri and the Attorney General Andrew Bailey. We'll explain that here after the top of the hour. Also, Beth Brelja, who is with The Federalist, her piece that she wrote this week was about Appalachia and some of the things that happened at the debate, so we'll hook up with her, plus an audio cut of the day. Right now, he is a staple on the Reardon Roundtable, former State Senator John Lamping with us this afternoon. John, how are you?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing pretty well. What a great show. I love Elaine Zito, and you got Zig in the next hour. It's a phenomenal show.
Well, thank you very much, and I wanted your take. We haven't spoken in the aftermath of the debate the other night. I thought, and one of the things I did quote you yesterday, because you said something I think that is true. No matter what happens, and we're certainly hoping things go in the right direction here in a few weeks, I think we've learned here in the past few months, in particular, coming off of Tuesday night, that the future for the Republican Party seems relatively strong, John.
Oh, yeah. I mean, going into the VP pick, the number one priority for me was that the VP be of the next generation. And at 40 years old, J.D. Vance is all that. And he just happens to be amongst a group of young Republicans who are media savvy. They're articulate. They can explain what Trump's mega movement means in ways that Trump can't, in ways that more highly educated Republican listeners want to hear. And to the extent that in the debate, it was once again 3-on-1, he crushed the three.
No doubt.
He just did a phenomenal job with the moderators. And I mean, what can you say about Walz? I mean, he's a very unserious person. He's certainly not up to this very serious job. And you know, if anybody could make Kamala Harris look more dignified, it was probably Walz in this debate.
Yeah, no kidding. And by the way, you know, it was somewhat refreshing to hear some of the folks on CNN and elsewhere criticize, and even in the New York Times and in some of the print publications, criticize Tim Walz and his performance, and, you know, at least admit that J.D. Vance was relatively successful the other night. On the other hand, oh my God, this Tim Walz guy, you know, now we know why he hasn't been sitting down on the Sunday shows for the past 6 weeks, right?
That's for sure. And, you know, most people like to say, well, the VP debate doesn't mean anything. The VPs don't mean anything. And I think just all the rules are thrown out the window in this go round. With the Democratic Party, with Kamala and Walz not willing to sit down and take interviews and speak to the press in any way, shape, or form, when they do have an opportunity to present themselves to the country and they fall so flatly on their faces like this, I think it was a very meaningful night. And as far as like longer term optimism, oh my gosh, with Vance, with Vivek, I like Tulsi Gabbard in our party. There's so many young Tom Cotton, so many young, well spoken, knowledgeable people who half of whom all the names I just mentioned are all veterans too. And the fact that the party has turned now, Republican Party is the working class party. It's clearly is working class party. The unions are not participating. The firefighters union came out today. They're not endorsing. They had endorsed Biden last time around. It's a very wonderful moment. And all we need in this next 30 days now is we need victory to seal it.
Yeah. And let's kind of talk about what you feel, where you feel the landscape is. I think Celino, I always like speaking with her because her boots are on the ground. She actually talks to people and she has a good sense. And certainly she did in 2016. And she wrote a book about it called The Great Revolt. Now, I always give you credit, John, because you knew that I was a naysayer in 2016. I just my position on Trump was, I think, multi-tiered, if you will. But one of the things that a lot of us said at the time is there's no electoral path for Trump. And that certainly got blown up because of Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan. I don't know how Wisconsin and Michigan are going to go, but it really could come down to just Pennsylvania. And, you know, here again, I got to kind of talk politics with Helene because this is going to have an impact potentially from several different angles. One, I think it's going to illustrate the ineptitude of the federal government in this administration even further than they've been, you know, laid out at this point. But it also presents some challenges for voting in the next few weeks, which has me a little concerned about North Carolina.
Well, we need to be concerned about what votes get counted, who gets to vote. I think that without that cloud of uncertainty surrounding the level of election integrity, I mean, I'm optimistic anyhow today. I think we're setting ourselves up for just a phenomenal day in a landslide. Back in 2016, Mark, what I experienced is I saw working class people, guys at the grocery store, that were talking about Trump that don't talk politics ever. And I knew that was happening at the, on the, on the ground level. Now it's all across the country. It's well understood. You know, the borders has collapsed. We're involved in two wars right now. The ineptitude will be so obvious, what's going on down and not going on down North Carolina. But then listen to the punditry, the polls, the tabs in polls. You hear in Michigan, under 30 voters, Trump's tied with Kamala with under 30 voters. Trump is up 10, 15 points with Latin American voters, with African American voters. I mean, all of these things, all what makes up the electorate for the Democrats, Trump's 10, 15 points ahead, and yet somehow the national polls showed it a dead heat. Now, you and I, we're all programmed to think, oh, it's going to be very, very close. I think if they count the actual ballots that are cast, I have a feeling it could be just a huge night for Trump, a huge night for Republicans. You could wake up the next day, hopefully, probably next week, and see a 2 or 3 seat majority in the Senate, have the House, and then have, and the thing about having Trump in the White House this time is he knows what to do this time. He knows not what to do. He's surrounded himself with much better people. And, you know, he's only going to be there for 4 years. And this next generation of bright, articulate, well-spoken people will be right there behind him. I heard the Vivek thing about running for the governor of Ohio in 2026. There's so many positive things that could happen if Trump wins, and I'm optimistic that 4 weeks from Tuesday he will.
If anyone is looking for a striking juxtaposition on opinions, if you listen in the next hour to my friend John Ziegler, you're not going to get as much optimism. But, you know, John, I kind of go back and forth on this. I did not feel very good and optimistic at the end of August, certainly even the beginning of September, but I am seeing some things that are encouraging right now. And even just talking to Selena, I think, made me feel better. But you got to have people turn out. And, you know, we're only at the first week of October, so we'll see what happens. I'm sure that there will be more surprises down the line. Hey, by the way, I apologize. I did not get to see you at Evolution Festival the other night. Did you have a good time? What did you think of the Killers? They were great, weren't they?
The Killers are great. I thought the festival itself was phenomenal. It was quite the concert week for Karen and I. We were there Saturday, Sunday, and then Tuesday, Stain was in town. But I thought, I really hope it comes back. I love who was there to see, you know, Chic, Todd Rundgren, like the lesser name, Sunvolt. Beck was great, and it just was a really well-run thing, and I was grateful for the fact that it didn't rain and was kind of cool, and you know, I hope they make it back next year.
I do, too, because, you know, I think ticket sales ended up being a little soft. They had these VIP tents that were set up behind the regular VIP, and I'm told that a lot of those were comped, and you know, this is tough because there's a lot of competition out there. We know the economy's a little soft, but it is a great festival, and I think that Steve Shankman and the gang really put everything into it. The only downside for me was the mud, but if you prepared, you wore, you know, old shoes or something like that, you got through that, and it seemed like it was another great festival. So we'll see. I hope it's, you know, something that can point toward year three, but I don't think that's guaranteed just because of the business model.
No, you're right. I was Mike Mushok, the lead guitarist and songwriter from Stain. I was with him Tuesday night, and he said, you know, the challenge that all these festivals have is that they end up overpaying the bands. It's a great gig for the bands, but the amount of money they make on these festivals, I don't know why that is. I think some bands are reluctant to kind of share a stage or be third down the ticket or something. But I had a great time. We stayed at the Chase. We booked our bar tickets in February. I look forward to seeing who they announce next spring, and hopefully it's every bit as good as this last weekend.
I hope so, too. All right, Lamping, thank you very much. We'll catch you on the roundtable soon.
Good seeing you.
Take care. I don't think he's on tomorrow. I've got to check my list. I should know that. No, it is State Rep Steve Butts and Gene Evans will be here tomorrow. But John obviously is a veteran of the Reardon Roundtable. It's interesting, the optimism. And I'm not the best person to talk to, and I think everybody knows that when it comes to optimism, because I really did. I felt very definitively at the end of August that things were not trending very well. And some of that's just buying into the narrative and where the media is and the polling. But John's not coming on in the next hour really to talk only about the race. There's an interesting connection that he has with some of the work that he's done on the Jerry Sandusky case to Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, and a story that kind of got in the news this week about a case that Andrew is defending right now because it's a lawsuit brought by the ACLU. And then Ziegler's name gets mentioned in all of that, which we found somewhat interesting. And John was the person who shared that with me yesterday when the story came out from the Missouri Independent. We also have Beth Brellia, who is an election correspondent for The Federalist. I don't know Beth. I'm looking forward to having her on. I read a piece that she wrote about the moderators the other night, and I criticized this pretty much yesterday. The second question that they ask is about climate change. Now, it's not about the devastation that the hurricane brought. It's not about the federal response. It's not about people needing help in Appalachia. None of that. It's about you evil Republicans are in denial about climate change, and you're the ones to blame here for all these people that are dying, and you need to know that. And that was basically the tone of Nora O'Donnell as she sort of became opinionated at the end of that particular exchange. But Beth will weigh in on that. And then, of course, we have an audio cut of the day. Also tomorrow, we should make mention, it's a regular Friday. We'll have Paul Hall here on entertainment, some stuff going into the weekend for you to check out. Cusimano with a preview of the Mizzou game. And then this. Sue, I'm very excited. There was an announcement a couple of weeks ago that Bernie Miklas was coming on the radio to work at KMOX, and he's doing a couple of shows over there on a regular basis. And we are going to borrow Bernie for this show tomorrow in the 5 o'clock hour and talk about the Cardinals reset, and he'll have some opinions on the Blues, etc. I love Bernie. I'm a big fan. I still miss him from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It's never been the same without him, and he writes or had been writing, you know, columns with Scoops with Danny Mac, and I don't see those anymore. So I don't know if I'm missing them, if they're going into my junk, but we'll find out from Bernie tomorrow night. He's a St. Louis legend, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number three is coming up. Hang in there.
Get more at 971talk.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!